This is an interview with Justin B. Griffith, Jr. for the Youngstown State University Oral History Department. Today's interview is located in Warren, Ohio on April 16, 1977 at 9:30 a.m. The topic discussed will be on the history of the Democratic Party of Trumbull County. Judge, the first question I'd like to ask you is for you to give a description of your family and political background and relate what or whom or who has motivated you to proceed into the field of politics.
Well, my background, in regard to my background, my father was undoubtedly the motivating influence in my political future. As a matter of fact, he used to say we took the religion of our mother and the politics of our father. But Dad had been actively involved in politics before my birth. As a matter of fact, when I was born, he was Trumbull County prosecutor and fighting cases against, on one occasion, Clarence Darrow. Dad was a Democrat by his own analysis, that is to say, his background was rural. He came from the farm, which would have possibly symbolized a Republican background. However, his grandfather had run for Trumbull County Commissioner back in the 1880s as a Democrat, when Democrats were not getting elected to any posts in this county. Dad had been the service director under Billy Kilpatrick, the first Democrat mayor of Warren, and he was with the breakthrough in involvement by Democrats. The area had been traditionally Republican, and he was active in that. Since I was a little boy, as I look back on the historical figures of greatness, as indicated to me by Dad, they usually turned out to be Democrats. Wilson, Newton D. Baker, the great leaders of the past were never listed as Landon, Hoover, Harding, and Cooley. They were the Democrat people, and that's stuck in my mind. I think it's also factual, let me say.
Can you relate part of you? Tell me a little bit as far as your development of your political career as you started and brought up to today.
Well, I wish I could make it sound more noble, but I was not particularly motivated towards a personal involvement in politics until I'd been practicing law and accounting for four or five years. My training was both as a certified public accountant and as a lawyer, and as you can imagine, that led to work in the tax field in large part. And I'd been engaged primarily in commercial activities for a period of about 5 years, and the thought occurred to me, that I guess as it does to every law student, that it would be fun to try the deep involvement in the courtroom for a while. And in 1960, the prosecutor's post opened up, that is, the fellow had been prosecutor for several years, was moving on to probate judge, and it left an opening there, and I was blessed with a good political name that had built up a favorable reputation in the area, and it would be possible to get elected with my name, they were the same. So I ran with some young enthusiasts. As a matter of fact, the young enthusiasts I speak of are the likes of David McLean, who's on the Common Pleas bench now, and whose father was my father's assistant when he was prosecutor. That is, William McLean. As a matter of fact, he was the first Catholic in the courthouse. At that time, not only were Democrats not plentiful, but there was little in the way of black involvement, no Jewish involvement, and no Catholic involvement. On my staff was an associate I have now, Tom Lesson, who was a young man interested in trial work also, and made enthusiastic staff and a fun experience in the 4 years in the prosecutor's office. After 4 years in the prosecutor's office, a new Common Pleas judge was established by the legislature for Trumbull County, and it was an opening that would be easy to get elected to with my background as prosecutor for 4 years. We had extensive litigation in those 4 years, and had built up a favorable political reputation in that period, which is fairly easy to do with diligent performance in the prosecutor's office. That's one of the compensations proposed, is the ability to develop a good political image, so that I was able to run for common pleas judge in 1964, prevailed by a wide margin. And I stayed on the common pleas bench for 7 years. And finally, stepped aside to come into practice with my former associate in the prosecutor's office, Tom Lutzen, and my father, who had since come down from the Supreme Court of Ohio and was practicing with Tom here. It seemed that I thought I'd enjoy practicing with him. So I came over and I've been practicing in his office since.
Can you give an analysis of your main political philosophies and how you apply them in practice, and are these philosophies in context with those of the Democratic Party of Trumbull County?
That's a pretty broad question, and I'm not sure that I've ever formalized my philosophies. I guess probably uppermost in my mind, as is in the minds of many people, I think, of the current generation, is the importance of providing equal opportunity for everybody. Consistent, equal treatment would be a hallmark of my political beliefs, I believe. That is, while in the prosecutor's office, I felt it was extremely important for people of means, people of prestige, people of position to be given exactly the same treatment as those with no political connection or economic prestige or such things as that. And I think that's consistent with the basic Democrat philosophy. I guess you could run the gauntlet of liberalism and conservatism, and the experiences that I've had have lent themselves to a cross philosophy. That is to say, I'm enough of a pragmatist to be quite conservative in the area of law enforcement. The Miranda Escobedo decisions were abhorrent to me. I never shared the philosophy of them. I thought, and I think my fears were overstated, but I've never changed my thought that they were poor decisions. They provided a criminal with a right arising from the failure of an individual. That is, Cardoza and Holmes never shared the philosophy of the current trend of decisions in law enforcement. They never believed that a guilty party should escape punishment by reason of the failure of an improperly trained or incompetent police officer, or even a malicious police officer. True, they would have a cause of action against the police officer. No question what they should be able to sue the police officer. And I do. I only suggest to you that the old line theory that no confession should ever be admitted into evidence, which has been obtained by threat, promise, or duress. Now that's fundamental with it, and with anybody. And during our period in the prosecutor's office, if we ever heard of any confessions that have been obtained by any type of threat or duress, they obviously were thrown out and the accused was released. But we see the recent decisions where a person points out a body merely because they were being taken to the police station at the time, doesn't seem to me should preclude the prosecution. Well, that stemmed from my prosecutor's background, so you could conclude that philosophically, as a in the area of law enforcement, I would be quite conservative. As I mentioned, in the area of civil rights, it seems to me that no person should be deprived of the right to purchase a home, for example, any place in this country, by reason of the color of his skin. Now, that's fundamental to me, and I would put that right over property rights. Now, that comes into conflict with the right of a property owner to do it as he pleases. If the property owner can do with the property as he pleases, then he can refuse to sell it to a man by reason of the color of his skin. And I would put the right of a person to live and participate in democracy by reason, irregardless of his race, creed, or color, above property rights. So I would say in that area, I would be regarded as a liberal. As a matter of fact, my public activities, any awards that I've ever received, any involvement really in the attempts at correcting government have been in the area of trying to provide involvement. That is, I headed up an organization called the Alliance for Community Understanding, which was dedicated to the principle of open housing. I had been a member of the Warren Charter Commission to provide a charter to the city of Warren that would have provided efficient business-like management for the city of Warren, a city manager. Just as a hospital hires professional manager, our city would have been able to have done the same rather than elect somebody from within our ranks. I had been interested in drug rehabilitation, seeking to help those that had become outcast from our society by reason of a youthful failure. In most instances, they were youthful. So, equal opportunity, efficient management, and a pretty conservative attitude on law enforcement. I hasten to say in regards to law enforcement that my main philosophy in that area was not severity of punishment, but certainty of punishment. I believe that a burglar, when he's going in the house, is not worried about the fact that Ohio for years had a life sentence if the house was inhabited. I don't think that was on his mind. I think his whole concern was, will I get caught? I think certainty of punishment is the deterrent and not severity of punishment. So I've been criticized, in fact, by the hard-nosed law enforcement people for a philosophy of very tolerant punishment. If somebody kicked in a cigarette machine, they were very apt to get probation. I did think they ought to be brought to justice. If they violated the terms of their probation, then I did think they ought to serve time. They weren't able to handle prosperity. So it was certainty of punishment, not severity of punishment, that I did and do believe in, right to this day. I don't know whether that's a political philosophy, but it's a governmental philosophy.
Do you think the judicial system here in Trumbull County is well-efficient and well-run?
I think so. I think we've had some example of poor individuals, as most anybody will, or any business will. We've had some examples of extremely enlightened personnel. We'd spent years with Judge Burrell, a Republican, incidentally. And finally, in his very late years, had become, I'm reluctant to use the term, but I'd say had become senile. But he gave us many years of competent performance. Judge McVicker, I think I make no apologies for my father's performance in 19 years on the bench. I think that historically, Trumbull County has had a strong bench. I can't resist mentioning two traits of two judges that are worthy. I think David McLean, who's on the bench now, is one of the sharpest legal minds, I think, almost in Ohio. I think that he could fit on any court and provide intellectual leadership. Judge Batten has an enthusiasm in the probate court that has brought his docket up to where you can get your probate matters handled with great dispatch. I think that's an asset. Yes, I think we've had a strong bench.
When do you think the Trumbull County Democratic Party was at its peak of existence? And can you recall some of the individual and events for the cause of this high point?
I think that from its start, it's increased in stature. I guess it's like a high school kid thinks that the football players on the 12th grade are really big when he's in 9th grade, and as he gets to be in 12th grade, they kind of out there human beings. And that's a little bit, maybe my image back in the 30s when my dad was on the Court of Appeals and Judge McLean, and it lasted even into the 50s when Judge McLean was on the Common Pleas bench. You had Dewey McVicker on the Common Pleas bench. I thought those were strong days, and Roy Hardman, a man of little academic training, but a natural, had some natural ability as a sheriff, I thought. I can't resist mentioning your grandfather as county engineer. It made for a very strong Democrat party. That is to say, we had the sheriffs, the Democrats, had in their patronage ranks the sheriff, the treasurer's office, Walter Rue, the county engineer, and the sheriff's, the sheriff's office, treasurer, sheriff, county engineer, and clerk of courts, Pete Campana. Now, those are all jobs that build up, those provide the means of building up a party. And we were fortunate to have people that did the job. They were Democrats, as our representative said at the top, last year, Charlie Carney said, I never told anybody that I wasn't pro-labor. I never told anybody I wasn't liberal. I never told anybody I wasn't Democrat. But he said, by God, I tried to serve everybody in this district. He said, anybody that had a problem, I tried to serve them. Well, I think that was a little bit the philosophy of these people. Dad always had the attitude that you were a Democrat during the election process, and after you had your after the election was over, you served everybody. But the possession of the patronage offices really helped build a strong party. And that was, I think, the real heyday of the party. But I think they're strong now. We've got the sheriff's office, clerk of courts, treasurer's office, auditor's office, and I think some fairly strong personnel in those posts. The Republicans for years have held the sheriff's post. And if you were to take the people in the county, we had more Democrats registered than Republicans. The Democrats had to help elect any Republicans that are in office. Ed Reeser in the county engineer's office has to get elected with some Democrat support. He does a good job. Bob Barnett was a good sheriff for years. I think Dick Jackmus is going to provide an outstanding example for the Democrats, and we'll be proud of it. So I think when you get a man that's doing a job, and you do have the patronage post available to you, you're able to build a strong party, and I think they're strong now.
Okay, having accounted for the high points of the Democratic Party, could you speculate upon its lowest ebb?
Well, obviously, in this county, it's not hard to pinpoint the low ebb. Was in the early 60s when what's been referred to as the sewer scandal came up. There had been the Warren City Council was controlled by some Democrat councilmen, and they've been extorting money from anybody that was seeking to do business with the city of Warren. That is, water. If you wanted a water line extended, you had to pay the councilman to get their vote. And strangely enough, you'd have thought it would have been big dollars. The money involved in that sort of thing, zone changes, anything that required legislative action, was small dollars. By that I mean $200 or $300. But it was just enough to corrupt a person. To corrupt a person that needed the zone change and that needed the whatever it was they wanted, water extension outside the city. As a matter of fact, the practice started fairly accidentally, I think, as a political maneuver. Mayor Burbank, a Republican mayor, back in the late 50s, had attempted to get some worthwhile legislation passed, and the Democrats at first obstinately resisted, just, I think, more on political grounds than anything. Later, they were approached by the local underworld operator here, Mike Farah, and Mike started extorting money to get legislative support, and he went through some of these councilmen. He'd get them to hold their support. They later cut Mike out of their dealings and would handle it themselves, and we were able to convict them of bribery. That is, we had three councilmen and the chairman of the Democrat Party convicted of bribery and some of their personal of extortion back in 61 and 62. I might say, when I say that the work of the councilmen was small payers, there were some big dollars involved in the extortion by the Democrat Party, I believe. That is, $35,000 was passed, and they were talking about far more than that to obtain a sewer contract here in Warren. Those fellows were convicted, and properly convicted, as indicated in the fact that they took it first through the United States Supreme Court, four cases, and sent away. I suppose there was some, you could call that the low ebb in the Democrat Party. I never really felt that. First of all, it was our office. I was prosecutor, and I handled the cases with McLean and Letson, who are very instrumental in developing the cases. And I think that the fact that it was a Democrat prosecutor that was pursuing it, and the fact that the Democrat Party did go through a rejuvenation program, that is, we elected many new precinct committeemen. We got folks in there with some real enthusiasm, and young people, and I think by 64 the party had come back and was putting itself together with new faces and new enthusiasm.
Now, speaking on the internal structure of the party itself, what is the significance of a person that's a precinct committee man and the principles and the purpose of the executive committee in Trumbull County?
Okay, I'm talking, let me go with figures that I had back in the late 60s. There are more than that now. I think there are about 260. But back in the olden days, 1964 or so, we had 230 precinct committeemen. And the fact of the matter is, to give you an idea, if you could control a party with 40, now that's not a true statement, but it'll illustrate my point. That is to say, if we had the prosecutor, if I was involved in politics, and we had sought people to run for precinct committeemen that would be willing to engage in some reorganization of the Democrat Party, and the election of 40 people, that was all we really had that could be listed as folks we had induced to run and got elected. With those 40, you had enough swing votes that coupled with the other precinct committeemen that would split it pretty much down the middle on issues, to where you could prevail on any solid block. Now, we had one instance in which Labor sought to put in one of their supporters as a recorder. Mrs. McElrath had died, and they indicated they had a fellow that they wanted put in office and called to obtain support of the pre-committeeman. And we said, this was a labor leader from Minnesota, I might say, and a competent fellow, but he, I think, was off base in this instance. He said, we are expecting you to support the man we're interested in. Now, Mrs. Manasseh, Margaret Manasseh, had been the first assistant county recorder for years. She was a delightful person, well qualified, and the only reason they didn't want Margaret Manasseh was they said she couldn't get elected because her name wasn't Jones or Smith or something. Well, Leaving any doubts about Margaret Manasseh being able to get elected, she was competent, qualified, and the days of not being able to sell a name other than a quite Anglo-Saxon product name, I thought, were over, and so did our kind of reform group, and we prevailed by a wide margin in getting Mrs. Manasseh put into the post on that vote, and we were able to get her reelected when it came time for election. Well, the 203 people vote on any on the general governing policy of the party, to vote on any replacements for Democrat office holders that leave office during the term when they have to be replaced for a period of time, and it's important for that reason. The executive committee is a small number. I think it's about 25 of the precinct committeemen that meet for the purpose of carrying on the day-to-day activities. The fact of the matter is, the executive committee has not been very. The central committee only meets once a year or so, and the executive committee meets not much more. The work of the party is carried out in no small part by the secretary and chairman. The secretary of the party in Trumbull County's instance does the bulk of the work and accordingly has much of the say-so in the party. Now that's offensive to many people. They say, geez, he's running the party. Well, somebody's got to run it. And there aren't too many people that really want to run it. You know, the pay is not good, like zero. Now I suppose the way you make up for that as a practical matter is that you put the chairman of the Democrat Party and the secretary of the Democrat Party on the Board of Elections job. Now that's the practical aspects of it. The Board of Elections job, I think it pays $6,000 a year. So they make some money from that job, which has little in the way of any activity on it. They only 12 times a year, maybe more than that, but it's a pretty nice job. In this instance, our secretary couldn't be on the Board of Elections. His wife is. So the family and his wife is a very competent lady, Mrs. Shaver. But that's kind of the workings and the way the party operates.
If you were yourself were ordained as the head of the Trump County Democratic Party, what changes would you like to see come about?
Well, I guess my changes would be the changes that I would be interested in would be more in government rather than politics. I'm not happy with the party system. I realize it's not as powerful as it was back in the days when they didn't have television and they were interested in meetings and people enjoyed a community get together, meeting of the candidates and so forth. I might try some modernized, if I was chairman of the Democrat Party, I might try some modernized approaches to the creation of the images that get people elected for election time. That is to say, I would move more towards, rather than the old traditional Democrat meetings, where you gather 50 people, the same 50 people that go from one meeting to another, and you lug 30 candidates in front of them to express their views and tell how good they're going to be in office. I would probably work towards trying to obtain financial support to get us television exposure. I regard the media as the main means of acquainting people with what their candidates are like, and I would seek out a candidate's night or nights on television. Could be expensive, and it would be particularly difficult because we do not have a television station in Warren that we'd have to use the Youngstown facility. So you've got wider coverage than Youngstown is interested in. It's a tough problem. I don't. But that would be where I'd be leaning. I'd be leaning more towards modern approaches to presenting the candidates rather than the old traditional ones, like the political buttons. The days of the political buttons are fading. You know, that used to be that everybody wore a political button. Well, they don't do that anymore. And I don't think that the Democrat meetings, the Republican meetings, are the answer to getting wide support. You know, I'd move, obviously, towards the image makers, the advertising people, Bob Sherman. Sherman is able to take a person's traits and accentuate the positive ones in the public's eye. One of his great ads, I thought, was he was working on the ads of Robert Nader, who was running for state representative. And Nader has got to be one of those most stubborn men that ever come down the pike. That is Bob Nader's nature. Sherman's ad read, "Stubborn, you bet your life, in the cause of righteousness." You know, well, insistent on equal rights, insistent on good government, insistent and stubborn to the point of being, that was the thrust of the ad. So he capitalized on a trait that could have been, you might say, well, stubborn is kind of a negative trait. Sherman was able to make that into a positive trait. I think it is a positive trait, and I was never unhappy. It was a true image. And images fly when they're true. And I would work towards that, I think. I would be inclined to seek out competent candidates. I think our leadership is trying to do that, honestly. You can't control the incompetent candidates. Anybody can run by getting so many signatures on the petition. But if I was working in the role of chairman, that would be my role. That would be my interest.
What would you say is the difference between a Democrat in Trumbull County and a Republican in Trumbull County as far as the bases and as far as today, the very little difference between the two parties as far as ideologies and more?
Look, taking the differences, fundamentally, the Democrat Party has the people and the Republican Party has the funds. That's a fact. When I was running for prosecutor, I had to contribute money to the Democrat Party to pay for joint ads. My opponent was getting paid. He not only was getting his joint ads, but he was getting paid from the Republican Party to carry on his own personal advertising. They had the industrial leaders, by and large, in their corner, and they were people that were willing to put their money where their mouth was. And we sit here with 60% of the voters registered Democrat in Trumbull County. We've got to say we've got the people. So if we just go with our voters, we've got the Republicans. They have been able to, through the proper use of their funds, and they have used them wisely, hang in there and maintain a fairly equal balance of offices in Trumbull County. I give them credit for that. I give them credit up in Cleveland. Bob Hughes up in Cleveland is in a town that should be Democrat by a wide margin. Sitting there with Kirk as mayor, we see it down in Youngstown. Jack Hunter, and it's been an imagery. They have been able to create the image of the bright, young, fair, non-political figure. Well, I do not mean to detract from that, but I think they certainly have gotten their most out of Jack Hunter, who is an average fellow and a pleasant fellow, but they have been able to bring out the best virtues of Mr. Hunter and put them right at the top. And Charlie Carney, who as a practical representative of the people, I believe can hardly be beat, has never had the favorable image. Jack Hunter came within, I think, came within 10,000 votes in his district of Take-Him, Charlie Carney. And that's with very little effort in Trumbull County up until the last 2 weeks of the campaign. I never should have been. As I say, Charlie is certainly has been representative of the labor philosophy. This valley represents the labor philosophy. Why in the world would they not be with that? He certainly has served. He's had one of the best organized offices. When they attempted when they came in here with the attempt to take over Copperwell Steel, where did we get our help from? We got it from Charlie Carney and we got it from Bob Tapp. We got nothing from Glenn. Glenn was a non-political animal. He was still studying the issue after Bob Taft had a bill in Congress and Carney had hearings going on at the Kent State University. When this valley needed help, we got more help from Barbara Jordan. We got more help from Barbara Jordan in Texas, who came in here and said that she was with us. that it was a question that should be looked into and it should be studied and it should be resisted until we had an appropriate answer. Now, I don't see that Hunter has provided the dynamic leadership that any more than Glenn has, and I'm just trying to give some examples of what I mean by a practical political. You know, there's a tremendous tendency to resist the term politician. Well, when I think of a politician, the real honest politician and non-politician is Eisenhower versus Truman. And let me tell you, I'll take Truman any day. And when they get all done with it, I say Truman will ride higher in the history books in the year 2000 than Dwight Eisenhower or Zachary Taylor or William Henry Harrison or any of these wonderful non-political figures. I don't distrust politicians. And Charlie Kearney is a politician. When he gets done with it, he'll be called a statesman. You know, he's gone to the hereafter. But as Kerwin, you know, Kerwin's another example. Well, I guess that's kind of a long-winded answer, but it's kind of some of my thoughts.
What do you see for the future of the Trumbull County Democratic Party, and also what do you see for the future in the National Democratic Party as a whole?
Oh, they've got the upper hand. I just the Republicans have, in spite of their funds and their ability to create a favorable image, have managed to there's no way they can get out of their exclusive club concept, it seems to me. I'm probably unduly critical of them, but I believe that. They listen to themselves talk up at the Buckeye Club and the Country Club, and they don't even know what's going on down in the street. And I think they've, good Lord, you know, they were the party that freed the slaves. And they lost the solid South from 1860 or 1876 when they finally turned it over to when they traded the solid South for Hayes' election. They had the South from 1876 until, let's say, 1960 when John Kennedy came in and the Republicans, Jerry Ford, came in to vote against the Civil Rights Bill, Barry Goldwater, the leadership of the Democrat Party. When you start to look to see who voted against the Civil Rights Bill, you'll find the real leadership of the Republican Party. When they say Jerry Ford, such a wonderful fellow, you know, I just think he was out of tune with the times. Personally, I'm sure he's a delightful. He must be as delightful as everybody says he is. I have no reason to think any different. He's honest, I'm confident of that. But he does not represent my philosophy by any stretch of the imagination, and I think he is out of tune with the times. Now, Nixon provided a fantastic bit of corruption that really brought out the maliciousness of the Republican philosophy, and he I think drove the blacks right out of the Republican Party right at a time when the blacks were coming into political power. You know, it was stupid. So I just have to say, and I don't think they can change it. Once an image starts going, once you get the ball rolling, oh, it's hard to turn it around. And you can come in with Edward Brooks, you can come in with Brooks. You can come in with the few involved blacks and try to turn that around. But the fact that the blacks put in Jimmy Carter, a redneck from Georgia, man, that tells you something about whether they know whether they're being accepted in the Republican Party or not. You know, they say that the South went with Carter. South did go with Carter, but it wasn't because of the whites in the South. It was because of the blacks in the South. And I give them credit. I think Carter may be a pretty good answer for us at a time when we need some conservatism. I don't know that it's a time to run wild with liberalism. I think Carter's very conservative. I think he may be a wholesome kind of a catalyst for our country, but I think the loss of the black support of the Republican Party may put them in serious trouble. They may pick up some ethnic support, which has traditionally been Democrat, that may keep them alive for a while. But I noticed in the plane dealer this morning they were suggesting the possibility of changing the name of the Republican Party. I think they're in trouble. When you get an election base cleared out around 20% of the people, you're in a heap of trouble. And I think they're in trouble. I need to be running on a Republican label. It'd be a handicap.
Well, these are all the questions that I've asked for this time. I've completed the questions, Doug. Do you have anything to add that you'd like to elaborate on, or?
No, you've pretty well covered the political philosophy. I might say that the general image of the people, of politicians, is that they're a corrupt, stupid lot that could never make it in the competitive industry. And I should tell you that that is not my image of the people that I have seen in politics. In business, not always, I hasten to say, there are many business executives that welcome something other than folks behind them that completely agree with them. But fundamentally, the best way to get along in business is to agree with management. And I tell you that the best way to get along in politics is to disagree. I can tell you that a political leader's every comment is going to get challenged. It's going to get challenged by the press. It's surely going to get challenged by the opponents. And the net result is that many of the people involved in the political scene that I've been exposed to, I found to be very sharp, quick-witted people. We've seen the corruption exposed on the front page of the newspapers whenever it occurs, and it paints the image that the bulk of the office holders, I think, have an element of corruption to them, and I don't believe that. I've just seen so many dedicated office holders that are completely satisfied with their salary and merely want to do the job of serving the people to the very best of their ability. And that's the image that I have of the public office holder by and large. And I give thanks for the competence and for the integrity of the mine-run public office holder as I've come to know them.
Over the recent weeks, Jimmy Carter is the main newsmen have come out to really give him favorable support. They don't give him he hasn't received a bad press. Would you?
There's no question about that. I think you're absolutely right. Lord, they could have really bounced him on a number of things. He was going to reduce the administrative agencies from 1,700 to 200. He's found out you can't reduce them a bit. He was going to reduce the White House staff, and the fact of the matter is it's gone up. And they have not taken him over the coals on those things. I guess that the press has come to recognize that the people probably thought it was puffing anyway. And they may be thinking, well, he's still trying, he's still hoping to do that. I think maybe they took his commitments as symbolic and are giving him a chance to do what he can to try to reduce this octopus of government. I think his exchange on human rights with the Russians, let me say, I think he's dead right on it. I think he's got a very tenable position. And I think he can hang in and support that from now to doomsday. Now, the SALT talks, the collapse of the SALT talks, I feel badly that that's happened. And it may be that there's some element of compromise there. I suspect that there's some of that stems from his human rights comments. If that's the case, I would be ready to stand behind the human rights. I don't think we have a right to run the other country's affairs, but I think we have a right to comment on them. They have a right to comment on ours. But to quiet us for speaking out against their abuses, more of a suppression of the press or the government than I would care to have, and I think he's in a tenable position. I was not a Carter supporter, let me say. I was a Mo Udall supporter. I'm not unhappy with Carter's performance, and I realize much of the stuff he got into office on, he has not performed on, and he said today he's going to take inflation by 2%. I don't believe that for a second, but I don't mind him shooting for it. You've got to have a goal, and if he's setting a goal that he can't make, I'm with him trying to help at least move in that direction. I think that's a little attitude of it. But the country, I don't think they gave Jerry Ford a bad press. I think Jerry Ford would have beat Carter if he hadn't pardoned Nixon. He blew the independent vote with that move, in my judgment.